Back to President Trump's comments last night on 60 Minutes, continuing to question the importance of addressing climate change.
Look, I think something's happening, something's changing, and it'll change back again. I don't think it's a hoax. I think there's probably a difference, but I don't know that it's man-made. I will say this. I don't want to give trillions and trillions of dollars. I don't want to lose millions and millions of jobs. I don't want to be put at a disadvantage.
Well, others are pushing forward. In fact, they say fighting climate change can be job-producing and that we're running out of time. According to last week's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, there's just about a decade left to take unprecedented action to reduce the extreme impacts of climate change. The report recommends reducing current emissions being released into the atmosphere, but also capturing the carbon dioxide that's already up there, what's known as negative emissions. Let's take a look with Gregory Nemeth, professor of public affairs and environmental studies at the La Follette School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Professor, technologies will be needed to do this, but one of the easiest ways to get carbon dioxide out of the air is plants, right? Because they just suck it out.
Yeah, so growing things, so using photosynthesis to take CO2 out of the atmosphere and then store it into wood in a tree or in plants, that has the potential to remove billions of tons of CO2 from the atmosphere. So that's really appealing. All of these schemes to remove CO2 have negatives, have some concerns about them. And the biggest one with planting more trees is that if you're planting trees, that's land that potentially could have been done something else with. And yeah. if that something else is growing food, that's a real concern, because that's one of the biggest impacts of climate change is worrying about crop yields in the future. And if we're going to have food prices go up because we're using land for food and using it to store CO2, that's a negative effect. So right. Even things like growing trees that we think are pretty benign have negative impacts because the scale has to be so large.
Well, and also we know that trees only store carbon for so much or so long. It may not be long enough.
Yeah, there's a permanence issue with storing CO2 in trees that is not such an issue if you're storing it underground, for example.
That's okay, so let's move on to some of the other ideas. Carbon capture, storage, what are some of the ideas there?
So the idea with carbon capture traditionally has been you take a power plant that's using fossil fuels, and instead of venting the CO2 into the atmosphere, which is what we do now, you find a way to collect it in the flue gas and compress it, put it in a pipeline, and store it underground. So that's a way to avoid CO2 going into the atmosphere. With negative emissions, there's a way you can actually remove CO2 to the atmosphere using that scheme by, again, planting crops. And instead of using the crops for food, you would use them for energy. So you take CO2 that's in the atmosphere, photosynthesis will store that CO2 into the crops, then you burn the crops in a power plant, and instead of putting that CO2 back into the atmosphere, you're going to do the same thing, compress it, and store it underground. And that has the potential to remove billions of tons of CO2, and in this case, store it underground, where it tends to be more stable and will stay there as long as we need it to. It has a similar negative side effect that we had with planting trees, in that you need to use farmland for growing those crops. So if we're using that land for crops that we're going to use to store CO2 and put it underground, we're not using that for food, and again, that could create food security issues, which is something we want to avoid.
Well, what about, and by the way, we just read Steven Pinker's terrific and provocative new book, Enlightenment Now. And, you know, he talks about the fact that a lot of this is going to be on technologies that we aren't, you know, we don't even have yet that are going to come along. But what about just sucking it right out of the air?
Yeah, I mean, that's an appealing one to do as well. So this is using chemical processes. And, you know, we've already been doing this on things like submarines or spacecraft, where you need to remove the CO2 the humans are generating just by breathing. And so the idea is, could we do that at an industrial scale and capture CO2 that's in the air, capture that CO2, compress it, and then store it underground? That is appealing. One of the most appealing aspects of that is it doesn't have this large land impact that almost every other one of the schemes has. The biggest downside so far has been it's been dismissed as prohibitively expensive.
Right.
So something like 3 or 4 times as expensive as these other schemes.
Climeworks is a Swiss startup, and they say the costs are between 600 and 800 per metric ton of CO2 captured. There's another company in Canada that puts it closer to 250 per metric ton, but that's expensive.
That's expensive. And just to put that into comparison, if you looked at kind of the average price of CO2 over the whole world now, I think a number of about $5 is about right. There's other places it's high, like in Sweden and in the EU, you've got prices in $20 to $30. But overall, it's about $5. So that's way higher, like by a factor of 100. But I think what's interesting about those technologies is the costs have come down. So as you say, Climeworks did this first, the world's first demonstration plant about a year ago, and that was $600 per ton of CO2. Their next plants, they're saying they can do for between $100 and $150 per ton of CO2. There's another company called Carbon Engineering in Canada that thinks it can do it for about $100 to $200. There's a U.S. company called Global Thermostat that is doing its first demonstration in Alabama this year, and they think that will be about $150 per ton, and they have plans to get it down to $100 after that. So this idea that the cost of technology makes it impossible and we should just dismiss it, it seems to be falling away as we look at some of these real plants being built without severe problems and with costs that seem to be starting to come down. So there's a potential to really get the cost down, to make it affordable and not have the land use impacts. One of the biggest concerns that I would have is to do this in a real way, we need to be removing billions of tons of CO2 by mid-century. Yeah. And so we need to be doing this on a large scale pretty soon. Right now, so there's three companies we've mentioned. That's it for the whole world in terms of commercial direct air capture. And I think that adds up to about 400 people in the world employed by these companies. Yeah. But that really doesn't fit with the scale of the challenge we're facing. So that's the real challenge for direct air capture. It's how you scale up from three companies doing on the order of 5 or 6 plants to something like 600,000 plants, which is what we're going to need in the next 5 or 10 years.
Oh, wow, 600,000. Well, you get investors excited about that. You know, that's yeah, maybe the future. But look, again, Steven Pinker writes, the more speculative end of this kind of thinking includes plans to disperse pulverized rock that takes up CO2 as it weathers, to add alkali to clouds or the oceans to dissolve more CO2 in the water, fertilize the ocean with iron to accelerate photosynthesis by plankton, and again, suck the CO2 out of the atmosphere in different ways. What do you say, though, to Howard Herzog, a fellow of Steven Pinker's at MIT, who says, in effect, that there's a danger that this might lead to complacency in reducing CO2 emissions if people start thinking, well, we're just going to scrub it out of the atmosphere?
Yeah, there is this concern, and it's sometimes called, the jargony term for it is moral hazard, this idea that if you have this technology available, it's kind of like an insurance policy, and then you'll engage in risky behavior, and in this case, it means you won't reduce emissions enough. I actually think we don't really have the luxury of dismissing this negative emissions technology as something that will take away our incentives. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, an insurance policy for house insurance or fire insurance or something like that, where, yeah, maybe there is a sense in which if you have the insurance, you'll be less careful about fires in your house. But on the other hand, most people still want to have insurance because it's worth it to them and it's worth it to society. And I think that's kind of the way we have to look at it. I think the other thing is, you know, we're not reducing emissions enough already, even without talking about negative emissions. So I think to say that the reason we're not reducing emissions is because we've got this breakthrough technology that we can use in the future, I don't think that's really what's limiting us. And I don't think it'll be enough just to have the negative emissions. So we really need both. We need to do the work of reducing emissions that go into the atmosphere and at the same time start deploying on a larger scale these negative emissions technologies.
It's Gregory Nemeth, a professor of public affairs and environmental studies at the La Follette School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Professor Nemeth, thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to be looking a lot at the latest big thoughts on how to address climate change, well, for as long as it takes. You're listening to Here and Now.